I want to offer thanks to several persons as part of this drasha, as part of this talk. First, to Mirror Master Wilhelm, who during her family leave invited me to be a substitute teacher in her Hebrew class on Wednesdays. And second, to our Board of Trustees, who graciously approved the use of my time for another institution, which shows a lot of generosity and communal support. What none of them know is that I am being very rebellious in my teaching. At every turn, I am determined to demonstrate what I would call the liberal worldview of Judaism, which is to say the non-literalist worldview that they may implicitly or explicitly get by being taught by an Orthodox Jew. So during the first week, I offered them various metaphors for God that, though not heretical, are certainly expansive. And this week, we talked about the different names for Rosh Hashanah, and I contextualized them in history, which an Orthodox Jew has no conception that Judaism comes in strata. We talked about the four names known for Rosh Hashanah: Rosh Hashanah itself, the head of the year, Yom HaDin, the day of judgment, Yom Teruah, which appears in the Torah as the day of blasting, the day of horns, the day of toots, Yom HaZikaron, the day of remembrance, day of memories. Yom Teruah, I would estimate, is the oldest, and Yom HaDin seems to me to sound very medieval or early medieval. It's certainly post-rabbinic. Rosh Hashanah, I believe, is rabbinic in the era of the Talmud, roughly speaking. I'm not an historian, but I do have a lot of ability to conjecture historically. And what we arrived at, interestingly enough, was the sort of the valences, the affective valences of those terms. So going a little bit in reverse, Yom HaDin to the children, and I think to many adults, the day of judgment seems fearful and anxiety-provoking. Yom HaZikaron, I taught them the word nostalgia. Yom HaZikaron seems like a nostalgic or wistful day of remembrance, the day of awarenesses. Rosh Hashanah, the beginning, the head of the year, seems auspicious, optimistic, and a piece of renewal. And then Yom Teruah, the day of blasts, sounds celebratory. I think it's in reverse order of the way they arrived. And then, of course, one of the Israeli students called it Shana Tova, Yom HaShanah. There's a new Hebrew term in modern Israel that they're using also. So the strata of understandings about what is coming to us, and what was fascinating was the affective lens that one can apply to those terms. And conceptually, the idea of different senses and different emotional responses to what's arriving in 9 days or so. And as I want to point out, and I think this is a very true insight of psychology, but also spirituality, frankly, perspective is all. That as is said sometimes, pain is real, suffering is optional. Being broke is real, but being poor is a spiritual condition. And that's, I think, a piece of what's hinted at in this most fabulous of parshiot. We're told of awful, awful things that can happen when your voice goes for 60 verses. What I found really fascinating was the sort of the paradox in Pat's reading of the curses, of the horror of things described and the poetic beauty of the way in which it's described. There are a lot of beautiful sort of assonances, alliterations, a lot of rhymes that are quite beautiful to describe the worst of the worst, and a very imaginative and creative prose to describe how horrible things would be, even things that make allusions to readings a couple of weeks ago, of fields that you would plant but not eat from, that you would sow many seeds but reap very little to eat, that you would marry a woman but not consummate, another would consummate the marriage, that you would flee at the sound of a rustling leaf, that you would be afflicted by all these afflictions that have these beautiful sound forms and rhyme and kind of conjoin in beautiful aesthetic literary ways, but that tension between the beauty of the words themselves and the horror of skies turning to copper and iron. And so we're told at the beginning, towards the beginning of our readings, about how these curses and blessings would be assembled and announced, and we're told that half of the tribes would go to one mount, and half of the tribes would go to the other mount. If I recall, these are mounts in Moab, which is to say in the Transjordan, in the area east of the Jordan, which is now the country of Jordan. And in the Mishnah, it says that somewhere in the middle, the priests would wait, and they would be sort of the prompters for the curses themselves. And that idea of balance and fulcrum really fascinates me. The image there, and then the understanding I